It was a magical place. During lunch break, you can go snowboarding, you can go skiing. Oh my God. I got basically parachuted in. The idea of jumping off a cliff and building an airplane on the way down, you're maybe mildly confused. Diversity unmanaged is often a problem.
Welcome to Between Meetings, a series of on-the-go interviews in which we discuss innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Marian Danko. Today's interview with Ferdinand Klauser, partner and general manager at Kiska Shanghai. Ferdinand is an international brand strategy and marketing consultant, serving clients in automotive, sports performances, and lifestyle products.
So before we get started, let me give you a little present.
Thank you so much. I like the design. Pretty cool.
That's something you learn in China, right? Never go empty-handed to a meeting.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Sure. I was actually trying to find the right size for me and the right style. I have the one from TechCrunch.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the second one in my collection. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Sure. And thank you so much for your time. Finally, we have this conversation. I was looking forward to it.
Me too.
And let's dive right into your early entrepreneurial experiences. What are they? What did you learn? And what was your success or failure?
Sure. So my entrepreneurial experiences really started in university. So I went to film school in Germany and I studied screenwriting. And you know, this university was well connected with the local industry and there would be a lot of student competitions and, you know, local companies, you know, a lot of automotive companies and other tech companies in Germany would go to this university and have creative contests or creative competitions. Now, why? Because there was relatively cheap creative talent. And the competitions were about, you know, pitching an idea for a commercial or pitching the idea for a company video. And together with a fellow student, I won quite a lot of these competitions. And so out of this university experience, the two of us, we decided, it was actually around the time of the financial crisis, why not create our own company? And so right out of university, we founded a video production company that later developed into a full-blown advertising agency with two offices in Austria, where I'm from, and in Germany. And mm-hmm. we built that over the next 4 years or so.
What happened to the company? Is it still live?
No, so after 4 years, we were building it up. We were, you know, winning projects. We had a small team working also with a large pool of freelancers. And after 4 years, we decided to sell the company and we had a successful exit. We sold the company to a large network PR agency. So what are you selling when you're selling a video production company? What we sold basically was our showreel. And this PR agency, they wanted to go stronger into video communication and basically they bought our showreel.
Nice. So it was the first experience and successful one.
Yeah, you could say
congrats.
That.
Congrats. Pretty Thanks. Cool. And why did you decide to switch then to corporate? Because, I mean, if you have successful business, why you didn't start again a new company?
Yeah, so I, you know, I told you that I started as a creative. So mm-hmm. I studied screenwriting, I went to film school. Later, I went to art school and studied photography. And I felt that I really needed to upgrade my business know-how and my business, let's say, skills in order to create the impact that I wanted to do in business world. And that's why I went back to school. I went to business school and, you know, studied advertising and later got my MBAs. And that MBA experience in Vienna was, you know, very cool because it was a very, very diverse group of, you know, fellow students from all over the world. And that really inspired me. And when you are in communication is a very culturally focused, very local business. And I wanted to see the world. I wanted to get out of Austria, out of the German-speaking world, and you know, work on a global scale. So that means after my business school experience, I was looking for a new job. And also, I wanted to work on a higher level, on a, you know, big range of large brands. And so I found a company that I didn't know before, which was called Kiska, and it was an Austrian agency. And at that time, they were looking for a general manager to set up the US studio. And that sounded super cool, you know, getting out of, you know, selling my company, going to business school, and then going to the US, build a company. That was my dream. And I talked to this company, and we started an interview process. And after some time, it became clear that it wouldn't work out because of the visa situation. They couldn't send me to the States. And then they said, look, we cannot send you to the States, but we could offer you a job in a small Austrian village. And that was, of course...
super exciting, right?
Super exciting. That was not really what I was looking for. But I said, come on, you know, just visit us. And that trip to this small Austrian village, which is called Salzburg, really changed my life. So I came and stepped foot into Kiska, which is this creative company that I didn't know before. And it was a magical place, and it still is. So why is it so special? Because Kiska is a brand and design consultancy that is really built on diversity. So at Kiska, we have more than 250 people from more than 35 different countries and a complete range, a very wide range of design disciplines. So anything that you need in the complete brand and design value chain, from research to strategy to all kinds of different design disciplines, transportation design, sports and product design, product experience design, you know, all kinds of digital design. So it's really a magical place. And so I stepped foot in there, and I you know, never went back. So I started to work in Salzburg and moved to Salzburg, which is this mountainous village in Austria. And our studio, our headquarters, is really at the foot of a mountain.
Wow.
So that means that in the wintertime, during lunch break, you can go snowboarding, you can go skiing. And in the summertime, people go hiking or bicycle riding or you know, running just alongside the river, which is a huge luxury.
Do you think does it help to boost your productivity or creativity?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. So I think if you are, you know, feeling energetic, if you you know, feeling, you know, healthy and have the energy, of course you can transfer that back to your work.
Pretty
but,
cool.
But it also, of course, it helps to be an attractive employer. It helps to have a place where people that are interested in outdoor sports, in active lifestyle, in, you know, doing all kinds of what we call the Alpine playground activities, bringing them to Austria from all over the place, all over the world. I think that is, of course, a certain attraction.
Next one is traditional one. So you're talking about mountains, right? And you're talking about Salzburg, and now you are in Shanghai. So it's just quite different place, very far. So what's your China story? Why did you come here? How did you end up in Shanghai?
Yeah, great question. So my first assignment, my first job at Kiska was to be an account manager. So I was the window person between the creative team in Europe and our clients all over the place. And my first project that I was working on was actually for a Chinese client. So Kiska has a history of working with Chinese clients. We've been working with Chinese clients, I think, almost 20 years. For almost 20 years, we have had Chinese clients, but it was really a one-off. It was a, you know, not very frequent engagement. Now, I had this first project in China, and I, you know, it was my first time traveling to China as well. And the client was in the Zhejiang province. And they would pick us up from the airport in Shanghai, and we didn't take the train. They would put us in a car and then drive us there, 3-hour ride, and it was very gray. It was polluted. It was not a beautiful experience. You drive on the highway for hours, and you see residential buildings alongside the highway. And coming from this kind of postcard mountain alpine playground to this kind of experience, most of the team was quite, let's say, not excited about it. But what I saw in interacting with the client, looking at the economic situation, at the speed, at the drive that China had, that was about, you know, 8-9 years ago, all I could see was opportunity. And I said, what we bring to the table as Kiska, which is we help companies to create brands and products that make your heartbeat faster, that really are original, that connect with users, that is something that is very valuable as a proposition to Chinese companies, because what they can do is they can make things, right? Mm-hmm. But what they often lack is creativity and innovation, and this is what Kiska brings to the table. So after my first trip, I started to talk to the management, say, we do have clients there. We should become also local. We should build up a local presence. And so what I started doing is I would fly to workshops, to presentations, to China, to Shanghai or other places. And I would stay another 2, 3, 4 days and do the rounds, right? I would do business development, meet new clients, and step by step, build more business. And at some point, there was so much critical mass, so much momentum, that it was clear, okay, it's possibly a good moment to take that leap, right? And start a office in Shanghai or in China. So, and the first step was really for me to, you know, let's say, take the leap by myself, right? So meaning that the management said, if you really think that you want to do that, then, you know, we are not going to stop you, but we're also not going to give you loads of resources. So see what you can do. So, you know, I got basically parachuted in and my first task was to find an assistant to help me communicate, find an office and so on. We basically had a micro office in a co-working space. Mm-hmm. That's where I landed in Shanghai. And from there, it was a pioneering journey to build up the team. And it was a great, great fun so far. We are now in our, you know, seventh year here in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. Our team is close to 10 people. We have our own office now. So, yeah, things are moving in the right direction.
So it's basically a startup here, right? Because you're building up everything from the ground.
Yeah. So it's totally a startup journey. And that means, you know, everybody has to do things left and right of your job description. You have to be very flexible. You have all the, you know, the idea of jumping off a cliff and building an airplane on the way down. That is really true. For us, it's, you know, for me, it was jumping down that mountain in Salzburg and trying to build that airplane.
Qiskai has offices in 3 continents at least, right? So in Asia, in Europe, and of course in North America, as you mentioned already before. If you think about it and compare those offices, right? So what role does Shanghai office play in the life of the entire company?
Yes, you're right. So we have 2 offices in Europe. We have our headquarters in Austria, and we have a studio in Munich. Mm. Our focus in Munich is on e-bikes, e-bike design. Mm. And we have a studio in California, which is very much focused on the US market. And in China, you know, when Chinese companies consider working with European suppliers, the first thing that comes to mind is, oh my God, it's so difficult to work with European suppliers. They are so strict. They have a different time zone. It's not a good experience. That's the first prejudice. The second consideration is, oh, they don't get China, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have the local insights into the market, into the consumers here. And so these are the 2 challenges that I had to overcome. So first, creating a delightful service experience. How can we service Chinese clients better? So that means we are building this office here step by step. And the first step was ensure good project management. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing, right? Client service, project management, make the collaboration smooth, cultural differences, all of these things have to be overcome. And the second topic was getting China. Getting China means we have a very strong focus in our Shanghai team on research and design strategy. And, you know, we have local researchers, we have we also have a diverse team. We have, you know, Chinese, of course, we have Americans, we have Brazilians. And together, we are every day learning about the market, learning about the users, the brands, and so on. And there was a moment when we were presenting to a young second-generation CEO about our insights and our ideas for how to create brands and products for the, you know, new Chinese generation. And he said at the end, you guys have a better grasp, a better understanding of young Chinese consumers than I do. And I'm, you know, it's almost my age. And I knew that at this moment, so we really checked that box. We really had achieved this level of understanding China. So that means these 2 things, right? Our focus, creating a great client experience and understanding this fast changing market. That's the role that we have. And gradually in China, we are now also building out our design team, right? So that means the next step for us is really doing more and more local design creation, design delivery.
To expand this topic, you as the foreign company here in China, so what are the challenges that you face all the time, right? And also you mentioned that you've been already here for 7-8 years.
Yeah.
If you just look back, perception of foreign business in China, has it changed in the last years or not really?
So I think the main challenge is really, like I said, is really getting a good understanding of the market. In many cases, you know, we have two, let's say, client target groups, audiences. One is Chinese companies that do have brands or want to create brands for both the local market as well as export. And the other main group is Western brands, foreign brands that want to be successful in China. And so I think what really has excited us from the beginning is that Chinese brands have always been very interested in learning. They are really open to new concepts or concepts that can help them to build the brand. We have seen in the past that sometimes foreign brands are less curious to really be sensitive to understand the differences in China. And so we work a lot with Western brands to identify how can these Western brands stay true to their core and at the same time be sensitive to the local market.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Yes, and I think we are greatly positioned to help brands answer this question because we have this global team, we have this deep understanding of Western values and you know Western brands, and at the same time we have this very I think sensitive team that we're building here that really both from local creatives, local strategists, local researchers, as well as the international perspective, together we can identify those differences, these nuances, and help brands position themselves to be relevant.
Yeah, this is actually a very interesting question because I've talked to a number of people, right? And they have exactly the same challenge when they're trying to communicate back to the headquarters some ideas, right? Some of the strategy that they want to change, how to adapt to the market, how to fit. And the communication actually is the problem, right? Because the headquarters is not willing to probably change that much. And that's actually the problem in this area. Do you have the same issues with your headquarter or not?
Okay. So first of all, I think, you know, at the core, there's a lot of cultural differences. And when we talk about cultural differences, right, one is how do people experience a process? And, you know, in China, the process is much more flexible. And, you know, in the West, it's more a straight line very often. And when these cultures clash, you know, in the best case, you're maybe mildly confused when you look from the West. In the worst case, you feel it's an offense, right? And that is something that is maybe absolutely unintended. It's just the way how things work here. And so I think one is, the first step is to somehow create this humility, this sensitivity, to really, you know, encourage people to ask the question, wait a second, let me calibrate here my perception, because maybe I'm hearing something completely wrong. So that's the first step. And the second step is, it's all about compelling stories, right? I don't think that much of this friction that you talk about is coming from bad intentions. It's just you need to create awareness for the difference, and you also need to create compelling stories to you know, take people with you on the journey.
So, and that's probably something that you crafted, right, successfully.
Well, I won't lie, it didn't go down without conflict, without differences. That's of course the reason why we have an office in Shanghai, is to be that lubricant, to be that oil in the machine, so that our Chinese clients and our European, you know, creatives can work together. Because if you would let them clash without, let's say, our team in the middle, there could be quite some conflict. So it's our job to absorb that and to facilitate a productive collaboration, co-creation.
And this is also the answer to those people or businesses outside of China who says, yeah, we want to be in China, but we don't want to open up their local office.
Yeah, so, you know, the topic is, I'm really a believer in diversity, and I believe that the best ideas happen at the intersection of different cultures, different disciplines. But the truth is, if we just throw together people from different backgrounds without any moderation, there is actually a high chance that it will not work out. So that means we have to be intentional about the collaboration, intentional about the diversity. We have to understand, you know, what are the differences and how can we make them work. So that's really the core of it. Diversity, unmanaged, is often a problem or can mm-hmm. create the conflict. But if you make it your superpower, you know, if you want to be the world champion in collaboration, then you can be a world champion in anything else that you're doing, but you first have to solve the collaboration issue.
We can't definitely ignore the impact of COVID on everything, right? Personal lives, business, industries. So what happened in your industry?
So, yeah, I mean, COVID took an interesting, let's say, development in China, because while it started here, it really hit us only recently.
Mm.
And apart from the fact that we were, of course, unable to travel, unable to bring creatives also from other locations to China, we could see impact in the different client industries that we serve. So Kiska serves three client industries. One is mobility and transportation, anything with wheels, anything that moves people. And then the second industry that we focus on is active lifestyle and sports. And the third one is technology products. And we could observe different impact based on COVID on each industry. So when we look at the transportation industry, we can see that people want to commute maybe differently, right? There's a strong increase, a boom in the e-bike business, for example. And we can also see that people want, since they couldn't travel and go on holidays or get other experiences, they would maybe invest in toys like power sports mm-hmm. products. But going forward, we can see that the whole e-mobility, let's say, development is for sure boosted by COVID. When we look at the sports and active lifestyle space, we can see that people are much more conscious about health. And, you know, after they experienced being locked down, there is a strong drive to experience outdoor, to experience nature. We can see it in China with the whole outdoor and camping trend. So that's something that we can see as well. People are really hungry for nature experiences, for outdoor experiences.
Mm.
And much more conscious about health. And finally, when we look at technology, for example, we can see that, products being multi-purpose or, serving different needs. We have all been working from home, but we also play at home. So when you think about consumer electronics, for example, we need to consider now different use cases for gaming, but also for working at home. So we can see these different impacts. When we look at our own industry, the creative industry, the biggest impact is about is on how do we collaborate. So previously it's unimaginable, but clients and team members would travel long distances for a meeting or for a collaboration workshop or presentation, and so we are moving a lot of the physical collaboration into digital tools. So that means, for example, when we work on large vehicles, motorcycles and cars, in the past we still do use clay modeling or 3D modeling in the real space, but now we work a lot with digital modeling tools, so much more VR and other tools. So we're definitely seeing a shift from physical collaboration to more digitally enabled collaboration tools.
Do you think that after the borders are open, people go back to physical?
Yes, of course. I mean, I think people are longing for physical collaboration. But I think the advancements that we have seen in digital tools will not go away. So I think there will be an uptake on travel. We know that we very much want to be able to send team members both ways or in all kinds of different directions to make that physical collaboration happen. But again, the acceleration that we see on digital tools is here to stay.
To round up, let's talk a little bit about something that you're extremely excited about, and that's probably some of the projects that you're working at the moment, and also that person that I'm interested in. I noticed on LinkedIn a post about the Kiska car, which was really cool. I mean, at least how it looks. Tell me more about those projects that you're working now.
Yeah, so the project that you're mentioning is the APG project. It's a car design project that we initiated inside the organization to ask the question, what would be, a Kiska car look like? Why do we do these projects? Different reasons. One reason is that we operate under very strict confidentiality. So, you know, we do many projects in different industries, including in the automotive industry. And what we do, we cannot show. And this is, of course, something that, is sad, because sometimes we cannot showcase the complete range of, creative power that we have in the team. And that's why we put ourselves a challenge and, expressed our pure creativity on this speculative project. And it's something that we're going to do much more in the future, because we really want to be able to show the work. And, Kiska is a bit of a hidden champion, and maybe doing these kinds of projects will change that. And I think what am I most excited about is exactly this space of the intersection. So, what's unique about Kiska is that we focus on thinking and doing, strategy and execution at every step of the way. So we have this complete value chain from insights, strategy, and then design expression in all different kinds of disciplines. And we do a lot of work in this space. So, all brands are asking us, okay, how are we going to be relevant in the next year? How are we going to be relevant in the next 10 years? And how can we be different? And this question cannot be answered by one expert alone. And in most cases, it cannot be answered by one single supplier, because maybe they have insights into strategy, but they don't know how to design a product. And what's unique about Kiska is that we can build this task forces, these cross-functional teams, and really create, think about the future, and create also a tangible expression, a compelling story about how the future could look like.
Thank you so much for taking me on this journey. I learned a lot from you and from the experiences that you've been through. I look forward to a new amazing stuff that's coming out of Kiska, and amazing projects, and hopefully one day I can drive that amazing car.
Awesome. Marian, thank you so much. It was great fun.
Thank you so much. Please like, share, comment, subscribe, and we see you next time.